This evening, by the grace of God, I wanted to speak about a besetting sin, as we might call it, a sin which, unfortunately, all of us commit, some to a lesser and some to a greater degree. Thank you. It is the sin known as condemnation. Today our church celebrates James, the brother of the Lord, who writes especially in his epistle about this matter of judging others, something we are ready to do at any moment and with a light heart, without first examining the matter. Thank you. And many times, without anyone even asking our opinion, we judge and condemn. I would like to believe that there is no tongue that is not guilty of this sin. If our Christ, like a physician, were to take a spoon in his hand and say to each of us, "Open your mouth and let me see your tongue. Let me see how many priests you have devoured, how many bishops, how many neighbors, and how many colleagues." Not one tongue would be found undefiled, and yet this sin never reaches the confessor. We commit other sins as well. We are human, and so we will fall. We are made of dust, and so we will sin. But this sin escapes our notice. It remains hidden and is not regarded as a very serious sin. A person speaking against someone else, especially when that person is absent. For most such conversations take place while the victim is absent. The victim is not there. He cannot hear us or see us, nor can we see him. So I say that it would be good for us to discuss this sin tonight, so that we may be watchful, because for many people it has never been brought to holy confession. They do not recognize it as a sin. They may confess something else, perhaps that they withheld a drachma belonging to someone, or that they had some other difficult situation with a neighbor, a business partner, a mother-in-law, a son-in-law, a daughter-in-law, or a brother. A thousand and one other things may be brought to holy confession. But this judging, this condemnation as it is called, has not reached holy confession, and it is a very grave sin. Our Christ does not accept it. He does not want it. Judgment is a matter that belongs to Christ alone. Among ourselves, we human beings are all fellow defendants. I stand accused, and so do you. Why, then, should we discuss and accuse one another when both of us are answerable, and yet we pay no attention to this? At the same time, it is a brazen yet cowardly sin. We are brazen when the person we are discussing is absent, but cowardly when he stands before us. That is the matter we shall discuss. This is not a good thing. It brings us no honor, either as Christians or as human beings. Yet you find that you cannot stop. I cannot stop. None of us can stop. And this is despite the fact that God has placed the tongue behind the teeth, so that when it is about to say something improper or unacceptable, we may bite it. So that it will not speak, yet it speaks. In the law of the gospel, our Christ has told us this explicitly in chapter 7, verse 1 and following. It is as though he were saying, "Do not judge, gentlemen, lest you be judged. Do not judge, lest you be judged. For with the judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you." He says that whatever measure you use for another person will also be used for you. With the same manner and severity with which you judge another, you too will one day be judged. If you wish to escape judgment, take heed. The choice is yours. Do not judge so that you may not be judged. It is said that there was once a monk in a monastery who was not very prompt in carrying out his obediences. Even when the bell rang for the monks to go to church, he would be among the last to arrive. The others therefore believed that he would be condemned to hell. He learned beforehand that his death was approaching and called them all together. He said to them, "Brothers and fathers, I am about to depart. Give me your blessing." When one of them heard him speaking about death with such calmness, and saw that he was not troubled at the thought of standing before the judge and being judged, he asked him, "Are you not afraid that you are going to die? You're dying, you who were hardly ever remiss, but were always there when the bell rang." And he said to him, "Listen, my elder, I take my stand on one assurance my Lord gave, when he said, 'Judge not, that you be not judged.' All my life I was careful never to judge anyone. That is the label I'm taking with me as I go to meet him." In other words, it was as if he were saying to him, "Then woe to you." Thank you. Have you taken it upon yourself to pronounce even Christ's judgment? The monk replied. And now you are deciding where I ought to go. It is a very evil and deeply prideful thing to judge another person, deeply prideful. Especially when people say, the way he is going, he will be condemned to hell. The way he is going, he will be lost. Who are you and who am I to know whether that person will be condemned to hell or whether you and I will not be condemned? A human being can change. How do you know what will happen tomorrow? He may repent. How do you know whether there is something else in his life or whether he has mitigating circumstances in the eyes of God? Who appointed you as judge? Who appointed me as judge? Generally speaking, this is an evil thing, and the worst of it is that the person who speaks against another is acting out of pride. And our Christ does not tolerate the proud. Pride is a product of Lucifer to imagine that you have the authority to sit there and discuss this person and that person is prideful. A person should keep his eyes on his own coffin, not on the coffin of another. When there is a coffin in your own house, you do not go to carry out the coffin from someone else's house. But we imagine that everything is in order with us and that we are guilty of nothing. That is precisely why we sit back comfortably and coldly discuss our absent brothers and sisters to their harm. Saint Augustine, as he is known, had these words written on the plaster all around the entrance hall of his house. Brother, if you have come here to tear apart the flesh of your absent brother, you have no place here. In other words, if you have come here to devour people who are not present, I tell you that you have no place here. You must leave. So why don't you come by one of these days, and we'll have a talk. I've got things to tell you, and you've got things to tell me. And what is it that we have to say to each other? Sit down, let me tell you. So you sit, and the other person sits, and it goes on a quarter of an hour, half an hour, 2 hours. And very often this also happens over the telephone. They speak against someone who is absent, even though that absent person is often innocent of everything they are saying. Of course, a question immediately arises in many people's minds, and they say, so am I sinning when I speak, even if what I say is not a lie? Lies the truth? Is what we are discussing true? If it is a lie, you are a slanderer. But if it is true, you set yourself up as a judge and condemn another person. In the first case, you are deserving of death. In the second, of execution. A human being has no right to judge. Thank you. There are different sides to the matter, yet a person sits and listens and often becomes a manufactured witness for the defense of a case that is entirely false. You know, many people will even lay their hand upon the gospel and swear in support of someone, though they know absolutely nothing about the other side. Suppose a woman wants a divorce, wants to leave her husband and take another man. Every day she sits there filling your head with the same thing. He did this to me and he did that to me, and then he did this and then that. The next day it is, and he did this to me and that and something else as well. And the next day, the same again. So now you become a witness for the prosecution, and tomorrow you are called into court and testify against Mr. Zampanos. You have no idea what she suffered. Ask me, Mr. President of the Court. I saw her every day, and I knew what he was doing to her and how he made her life a misery. Yet this witness does not even know the other man by sight. These are the so-called manufactured witnesses who go about accusing, judging, and condemning. When you appear as a witness, you are really telling the judge to condemn him, I know, and you must judge this man and vindicate the other person. Yet the truth may be entirely the opposite. A person does not know how things happened or all the circumstances surrounding each case. It is better to stand aside and ask God to guard him. David said, set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth and a door of enclosure round about my lips. If only there were some way for us not to have a tongue if we are going to use it like this. The tongue is a good thing, as you know, and what a good thing it is when it is used well. But if it is used badly, it would be better for us not to have a tongue at all. If it is used well, it is good. But if it is used badly, it would be better not to have a tongue, just as it would sometimes be better not to have eyes. I do not know. then, how you stand with regard to this commandment, judge not that you be not judged. I repeat, I do not know what state you are in regarding this matter. May you not be guilty, but I see how difficult it is for a person to guard himself. On that day we shall find ourselves answerable for many things. We have accused people, stained their honor, and wronged persons. We have done great harm in our lives. Let us ask Christ to bring to our remembrance where we have caused harm, so that, if possible, we may confess it and come to metanoia, to repentance. And let us ask forgiveness altogether, even for those things we still do not remember well enough to confess. Condemnation is poison in the life of a Christian. Guard yourselves from it as much as you can. Keep away from people who never close their mouths. Do not consent to hear accusations against people who are absent. Someone comes to complain to you about her mother-in-law, her daughter-in-law, or her child. Say, please, these are matters within your own family. I do not want to hear them. It is shameful to take such things outside your home. Besides, I cannot benefit you in any way. I can neither tell you that you are right nor tell you that you are wrong. I am not God. This judgment you want from me, you tell me these things so that I may judge and vindicate you, is not mine to make. I am a sinful human being. I have my own sin. Please stop, or else I will leave. We must not give room or encouragement to people who are like swallows, as John Chrysostom says. Do not bring swallows into your house, he says. Do not bring them in. For someone invites such people into his home, and from the moment they enter, before they have even said good morning, they begin accusing others and repeating stories about people who are absent. Such people should not be admitted into the house. They should not enter the house. Basil the Great says that both are equally guilty, the one who speaks and the one who listens. Some people say, I said nothing. She said it, he said it. But you listened. You could have stopped that person from the very beginning before anything was said. Please, if you want us to sit and discuss something concerning ourselves, then let us talk. But shall we talk about someone who is not here? No. There is a fine and instructive story about Napoleon. Once, a lady went rushing straight to the emperor, deeply upset and in tears, and she began speaking to him against her husband. He sat down at the table, leaned his head on his right hand, and covered his right ear with it. She went on and on at him. I do not know how long he sat there listening to her. At one point she interrupts and says, Your Majesty, does your ear hurt? Forgive me for tiring you for so many hours, but my case is serious. No, he says, my ear does not hurt. But I see, she says, that you have covered it and are standing in that position. Yes, he says, I'm keeping this one virgin. I'm listening to you with the other one. This one I'm keeping so that I can hear your husband too. I'll summon your husband as well, so I can hear him too, so that I can judge. Do you understand? He did not rush to tell her, yes, you are right, and so forth. Really, what a scoundrel, he does such things to you, I shall help you. Instead, he said, I am keeping this ear untouched, I shall not allow anything to enter it, not a single word from you. I shall summon your husband and hear him with this ear, and then I shall reach a conclusion. Many times we have repeated things that were lies. Later we found ourselves ashamed and asked people's forgiveness, because we had been led astray by other cunning and malicious people, and we believed accusations or even signed statements about matters in which those people were innocent. Besides, when someone has fallen into something, why do you then go over to him and deliver the final blow with your tongue? You can help him rise. You can pray to God for him. You can entreat the Most Holy Theotokos for him, for something he did, something that happened, something he suffered, or something he failed to guard against. That is what is good. But instead, you discuss him with someone else and say, Listen, what we have said here stays here, just between us. If it was meant to stay between the two of you, why did you entrust it to him in the first place? He will tell someone else, and do you know what he will say? Let what we have said be washed away like water and salt. This stays between us. I do not want you to leave it there. Then that person will tell another and say the very same thing. This stays between us. Do you know what such talk amounts to? It is like pouring water into a cracked jug. It simply leaks away. Since you did not have the strength to keep it to yourself, how can you tell me to keep it secret? And how can you expect to reproach me afterward? You went and told it. Do you know why you told me? If I was not supposed to repeat it, why did you tell me? Did you tell me out of love for me, or out of malice toward that person? You told me out of malice toward him, obviously. If it had been out of love, you would have covered him and kept him hidden. You did it out of malice. And if I tell you that 99.99% of Christians are guilty of this very thing, what will you say? And no one has ever brought it to a confessor, unless it was something really blatant, or unless someone has by now refined his conscience in the Christian life and goes searching to see whether he was ever an accuser of another. Only that person will have come to a confessor and said, I accused someone, I spoke against another. And what is more, about people we don't even know. Do you remember that fine classic story about Aristides the Just? Once Aristides found himself in the marketplace of Athens, while a vote was being held on whether Aristides should be banished. A man was holding a potsherd in his hand. He could not write, but he too had to vote either for or against Aristides. He happened to approach Aristides himself, without recognizing him, and said, "Please write on this that he should be banished." Aristides asked, "Do you know him? Why should he be banished?" "I simply do not want to hear him called the Just anymore," the man replied. "Write it for me." So Aristides wrote his own name, casting a vote against himself, and handed the potsherd back. The other man then voted for his banishment. Do you know how many people are like that? On Saturday I was at Petrarchy Monastery. There was a memorial service. And when I came out with my wife and my sister-in-law, we took a taxi, and the taxi driver says, "So, you're in there with those phonies? Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy." My wife had gotten in the front seat. She laid right into him. "And where do you know them from? Who are the phonies, sir? Which of the men in there? Give me names. Tell me by name which one of the people inside there is a phony. Which one of them do you actually know?" And so on. And he says, "Well, it's what the papers write. It's what I see. And how do you know it isn't exactly the other way around, that the phonies are the ones doing the writing and not the ones they write about? How do you know? You don't know the one and you don't know the other. So how do you open your mouth and pin a label like that on them?" The battle that had to be fought was fought all the way to Pangrati, where we were going. In the end, the man apologized and said that he was also an old calendarist. "After all, I am an old calendarist." I sat quietly, since my wife had already taken the floor before I could, and I thought, let her receive the reward for this. I sat and listened to the way people think. The man was ready to drip poison, to tear apart people he did not know and had never met, and to stain people's reputations, consciences, homes, and so forth. He was ready to do all of that. Such conduct does not belong to a Christian. But in order to justify our own misconduct, we dwell on the faults of others, faults which often are not faults at all, but slanders. If someone were to read the lives of the saints, he would learn many things about these matters. One evening, a young woman who was a nun was traveling toward Alexandria. She was dressed as a man, not for fashion, not to show off her figure as women do today, but for the sake of ascesis, of ascetic discipline, for ascesis, and she spent the night at an inn. That very night at the inn, the innkeeper's daughter was seduced by a soldier and became pregnant. Later, when her pregnancy was discovered, she blamed the monk who had stayed there, not knowing that the monk was not a man at all, but a nun. The day came, and they summoned the monk. The monk was declared guilty. Then the day came for her to give birth, and she became demon-possessed. The young man who had committed the sin also became demon-possessed. And the demon confessed that the monk was not guilty, but that another man, a soldier, was responsible. And that was indeed the truth. The girl gave birth, and afterward the nun took the child and cared for it until it grew up. In any case, They had expelled her from the monastery, so she remained outside with the child and raised it. In the end, she died. When they went to prepare the one they knew as Theodore, for Theodore was the name used, they discovered Theodora. Do you understand what slander can do, what sin can do, and how careful a person must be? You have no idea at all what the truth of the matter may be. The newspapers write things like this. I'm just calling this in as an example. There was no need for it, but I'll bring it in anyway. The newspapers write things like this. The girlfriend of the man from Preveza. Another one says the wife of Michalis the iconographer. Her husband caught her and left her. The girlfriend of the man from Preveza. People read this, form their judgments. And no one stops to say that perhaps things are not as they appear. But what is the real situation? This woman has been abandoned by her husband because he is living unlawfully in Arda with a woman from his village. His father had pressed him to take her because she had a large dowry, while his wife was a poor girl. Do you understand? She lives here in Athens, carrying her child in her arms and wandering the streets in poverty. Meanwhile, her husband presents himself as unmarried, lives unlawfully with the other woman, and has had a child with her in Arda. Yet a journalist writes here that the wife was committing adultery with the man from Preveza, that her husband caught her, and that he left her. But the truth is exactly the opposite. A popular saying tells us, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. Do you understand? It is enough to make you tear your hair out. You may ask me, should we not take an interest in all these things that happen? We should, but with care and discernment. And as a Christian, you should be far more ready to pray than to discuss the matter and accuse someone. For you may bring other people crashing down, people who do not have the strength to remain standing. I may hear something extremely harsh and ugly and still have the strength to hold firm. But another person may be vulnerable and may fall because of what you say, because you lack the discernment to keep your mouth closed. Very often the story is a lie. But even if what you repeat is true, you must know that if the other person falls because he is weak and cannot remain standing, you will find him hanging around your neck like another pendant. Do you know how many people have been swallowed up and destroyed through our carelessness and through our tongues? How many have lost their faith or been shaken? A person must therefore turn his attention back to himself. If a person paid attention to his own faults, sought them out and concerned himself with them, he would have no time left to discuss the faults of others. Besides, the faults of others do not cover our own faults. One of our ancient sages used to say, whoever takes another person's faults to cover his own is like someone washing himself with mud. For another person's faults are mud, filth, and stench. Why use them to cover your own? Can their mud cleanse your own mud? No, it cannot. Besides, Christ tells you, do not judge. Judgment belongs to me. I am the judge. You are not the judge. You are not the judge. Once a man died whom the people around him had already condemned to hell, just as I told you earlier about another man. Of course, we do not know whether he was condemned to hell or not. He was spiritually negligent, and in the morning they found him dead. Then someone knocked at one man's door, and there stood a tall figure, clearly an angel. He said to him, so-and-so died during the night, and the Lord has sent me to ask where you would be pleased to have him place his soul. Are you higher judges than Christ? The man did not even know yet that the other had died during the night. Where would you be pleased, he said. Where would you like Christ to place his soul? If someone asked me what I thought about a matter, and I was carried away into discussing it and giving my opinion, that would at least be understandable. But many times we ourselves start these conversations and go looking for people with whom we can speak coldly against someone else. Never discuss others and never accuse them. Satan is cunning and deceitful, and many times he even drives us to kill one another, causes married couples to separate, brothers and sisters to stop speaking to one another, and so on. And all this over things that are not true. Keep your mouth shut. Say, I do not know. The Lord knows. There was once a man who unfortunately was foolish enough to say, I am not afraid of the devil. That is a serious thing to say. If he had said, with God's help, I am not afraid of the devil, that would have been somewhat different. But he said, I am not afraid of the devil. That was not good at all. So the devil sent him this message, so to speak. I will put you in the frying pan and make you dance like a hedgehog. And with another person. Do you know what we do to him? Now, this man loved his wife very much. He had great trust in her, and his wife was very beautiful. One day he had a whitewasher in the house. The man was whitewashing the house. So what does the devil do? He appeared in the form of the wife's cousin, whom they had not seen for many years. He dipped his hands in the lime and knocked at the door. When she saw him, they embraced and kissed and so on. As he embraced her, he left the prints of his lime-covered hands on both sides of her back. They kissed and all that. Do me a favor, let me go and take care of a bit of business just outside, and I'll come back. We'll have lunch here, and Nikos will get to see you too, and this and that and the other. Fine. So the builder leaves and goes off to the shop. He's a relative of theirs. Nikolakis, I have come to see you. Unfortunately, I am going to cause you pain, but I must tell you the truth. What is it now? I want you to go home and see the marks left on your wife by the whitewasher. Look at the handprints on her back. What are you telling me? You will drive me mad. Listen to what I am telling you. So he got up and went home. There he saw that his wife's back bore the marks of an embrace from the whitewasher, whose hands had been covered in lime. Just try getting that suspicion out of his mind after that. That is the devil. But the devil also has his lackeys. Many people become instruments of Satan and do nothing else in life but carry out such work. Woe to the person whom God does not protect. And woe to the person who does not beg God to cut out his tongue, rather than let him utter a word that will cause harm. Do not be hasty. Do not open your mouth so readily. We are all sinners, and when a person remembers that he is a sinner, he cannot bring himself to open his mouth against another. Let me tell you something personal at this point. I'm sorry that I must introduce this thought. Many times I find myself speaking with certain people who have done such things that one could speak to them harshly and openly. Yet I bind my tongue when this thought passes through me at the same time. And what have you done, sir? What have you done in your own life? By what right will you judge him, speak about him, or entertain accusations against him? What have you done? At that point the advance is halted. The desire to attack and denounce him is cut off, and the whole matter is brought under control. May God bless us all. I have my own debts, and you have yours. You owe 1,000, I owe 100,000. Another owes 1,000,000, and someone else owes 100. We are all guilty. And that settles the matter. Therefore, when we do not consider our own sins, we are hypocrites. This is what Christ tells us. For there is no one without a vulnerable point, no one who is not guilty, and no one who is beyond reproach in the eyes of Christ. So how can you, who are guilty in one matter, judge another person in a different matter? You are guilty in this, yet you judge him for that. By what right do you make your own sins seem small and his seem great? Who appointed you to make such valuations and then come out on top, saying that everyone else is like this or that? Do you not think you are becoming something of a Pharisee? I am not like the rest of mankind, nor even like this tax collector. That is exactly how it is. Listen to the reasoning of our Christ. Allow me to repeat it. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, with whatever measure, whatever harshness, and whatever manner you judge another person, whether he is at fault or not. Let us even admit that he is at fault. You too will be judged. I will judge you by that same measure. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. The way you measure another person, finding nothing good in him, is the way you will be measured. For a Christian always tries to find whatever is good in another person and to cover whatever is bad in him. Even the worst person has something good in him. There is no one who has nothing good at all, and yet we push aside everything good in people so that we may find one fault, and out of our own malice, talk against them, slander them, and drag their name through the mud. We do this in matters of family, personal life, business, and every other area. But someone above is watching. There is an eye that sees and records everything each person does. At every moment, it is as though a reading is being taken of each person's heart, how he thinks, how much he speaks, how he says every word, and why he said it. What did he have to gain? What comes out of it? And he goes on and says, "And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not notice the beam in your own eye? You look," he says, "into someone else's life, and you see a toothpick, and off you go to accuse him, to bring it up against him, and tell him all sorts of things. Meanwhile," he says, "you have a beam inside your own eye, a whole roof timber. How can you, hypocrite, with all your own faults, see another person's toothpick, but fail to see your own beam? For as you know, there is a vicious circle. I accuse that neighborhood or that family, and they accuse me. I accuse others, and everyone accuses me. This vicious circle keeps going, and Christ wants to put an end to it so that this malice may be taken away. Or how will you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when behold, there is a beam in your own eye? Besides," he says, "if you do not first cleanse yourself properly and thoroughly, how can you possibly see that tiny, delicate speck in the other person? For this is how God has ordered things." The other person's sin amounts to 70 denarii, 100 denarii, 70 drachmas. But your own sin, the sin of judging him, is, before God, 10,000 talents, 6 million in pre-war currency. How then can you, who are so deeply in debt to God, say, "That man is a sinner, the priest is a sinner, the governor is a sinner, the neighbor is a sinner, the mayor is a sinner," and so on? How can you say it, he asks, when at every moment you have a beam before the eyes of God? First take the beam out of your own eye. First set yourself right in every respect, so that you can stand before the justice of God, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Once you yourself have been cleansed, he says, if it is even possible for a person to be cleansed to such a degree, then you will no longer be able to discern even the toothpick in another person's eye. But we make our own faults smaller. They are nothing. And other people's faults we magnify. We make them enormous. That's the devil. The devil is an eyeglass dealer. He fits us with whatever glasses he likes, glasses that keep us from seeing our own faults, so that we never correct ourselves, and that magnify everyone else's. Do you remember the Chrestomathia, the old school reader, what we used to learn there years ago? I remember back in grammar school it said that man carries two bags. One, it says, hangs in front, and the other behind. He carries two hanging bags, two packs. In the one in front he has placed everyone else's faults, while his own he has placed behind him. He does not see his own faults, though other people certainly do, yet he gives no thought to that. A person does not think about it. That is precisely the problem. Go to the cafe, the neighborhood, the town square, the playground, go wherever you wish, go even inside the church. You will find people gnawing away at the reputations of those who are absent. Sadly, that is how things are. What then does God see, and how will God judge us? He will judge us harshly, very harshly. We therefore need to work upon ourselves, upon our eyes, our hands, our ears, our tongue, and all the rest. These are good things given by God, but they remain good and are reckoned as good according to how they are used. At times they become instruments of evil, though they themselves are not at fault. Take the tongue, for example. In itself, it is simply flesh and skin within the mouth. Yet it is a mysterious thing and a great gift from God. In itself, it is neither good nor evil. It becomes good or evil according to how its master uses it. A mother may say, "I'll cut your tongue out," but what would that accomplish? Should you cut out his tongue or change the musician within him? The tongue is a violin played by the violinist, the human person. Should we smash the violin because I misuse it and do not know how to play it? The violin is not at fault. The violinist is, So it is with the tongue. It is in the hands of the violinist, the human person, and it may be used to pour out poison wherever he goes. It may stain, as I told you, whole situations and the reputations of other people, and so forth. The human tongue itself is not at fault. The tongue is like money. Money is neither good nor evil. It becomes good when used properly to meet people's needs, and it becomes evil when used to destroy other people and the person who possesses it. It is the same with the tongue. It all depends on how it gets used. The commandment we have is the one David gives. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. So the tongue was given to us to praise the Lord. But the tenant living inside, the human being, is wicked. He uses his tongue not to praise the Lord, but to blaspheme the Lord. Take a simple example. The young man, the husband, leaves home and goes to work. The mother-in-law, the daughter-in-law, and the little children remain at home. The mother-in-law is displeased with her daughter-in-law, who, being tired, says something sharp to her. The woman has the children to care for, the shopping to do, and everything else. She has not kept everything as perfectly as the mother-in-law used to with her own hands. And so, let us say she says something to her. When the husband comes home at midday, he asks, "Well, mother, how was your day today?" She wears a long face, showing that something has happened. "I can see you're upset." And if the son-in-law heard it from somewhere else, then one of her children told him that mother was upset today. Instead of saying, "Why ask me?" look to your wife and your children. She could have answered when he said, "I heard that Katina, his wife, for example, said something to you. I do not know anything about that." For example, "What do I know? Well, she is a tired, worn-out woman, raising children and doing all that work. If she says a sharp word to me, is it the end of the world? Just get on with things. Glory to God. We had a good time." Couldn't she have said that? Of course she could, but perhaps the poor woman, I do not know what she said, said something entirely different, and the mother-in-law took it another way. Then she adds the whipped cream on top, piles on all the custard, and serves it up. And then the exclamations invoking the most holy Theotokos in Christ begin, and then, you know, "I have only one mother. I can find another wife, but I can never have another mother," and so on. But this wretched mouth caused all the trouble, do you understand? Forgive the expression, but I want to emphasize the point, because that is how things are. I have not come from the Pleiades or from Mars. I live in this world, I have lived this life, and I know it. I speak from personal experience. Could she not have covered the matter over, even supposing that it really happened? Of course she could, but her malice would not allow it. She did not use her tongue as she should have. The wisdom of Sirach in the Old Testament gives us a fine example. Pay attention to it. When one person says something harsh to another, as in the case I am describing, where the daughter-in-law said something to her mother-in-law, she may have said, "The days when you did things your way are over." I do not know exactly how she put it. Perhaps she said it in self-defense. When such a word leaves the mouth, it may just as easily have come from the mother-in-law's mouth. Then, when the husband came home at midday, he might have heard from his wife, "Your mother was after me all day and did this and that to me." Could she not have said instead, "Why speak harshly about them? We do not know where we ourselves may be tomorrow. We may become worse than they are. Go on with your work, my husband." Could she not have said that? She could have. Things can turn out one way or the other. Sirach says that when a bitter word leaves anyone's mouth, it is like a burning coal flying out. Has it never happened to you while sensing the house that the charcoal burst and fell onto the floor? What do? You run to find it? Where's the coal? It fell somewhere. Otherwise, there's a fire, isn't that so? That's how it is. So this coal, he says, the one that got away, the one that could well turn into a blaze, it can also be put out, he says. If you blow on the coal and pile wood over it, it will become a blaze. But if you spit on it, it will go out. Both the blowing and the spittle come from your own mouth. Why, then, are you so malicious? Why do you not use your tongue to smother the fire that is about to flare up to keep husband and wife from separating, brothers and sisters from falling out, and a household from being filled with bitterness? Why do you instead pile on the wood yourself, add still more, and blow upon it until it becomes a great fire? And you never forget the offense. Not even the grave will take it from my memory, you say. The grave may not take it from your memory, but neither will you ever come out from under its stone. For how can you ever cultivate yourself and become truly human? You are not acting like a human being, but like a beast, whatever you may present yourself to others as being. If you do not have the strength to use your tongue for good, to bring good even out of evil, but instead seek to bring evil out of good, then God will not forgive you. Yes, that is how things stand. Many things we would have prevented in time, many situations we would have headed off before they ever began. The tongue was given to us by God so that God may be glorified, so that people may be sheltered and their faults covered over rather than exposed, so that people may be comforted, so that we may help one another and come to an understanding with one another. That is why it was given. It was not given to judge and condemn, or like a venomous serpent, to spew poison from morning till night. You may not be among those brethren who accuse others, but you may be among those who listen to them. Guard yourselves. Guard yourselves. When you get up and leave a place where people are condemning others, as I said earlier, they will be left talking to the wall and biting their lips. They need someone to listen. The devil wants an accomplice. He wants to draw someone else into this condemnation and this destruction. Condemnation is a grave sin, and I repeat, it becomes especially grave because it remains unconfessed. We have never thought to ask forgiveness, never. I myself often spoke against Father Augustine. That is, I do not agree with the extremes to which he goes, and I often spoke about this. My conscience reproved me, even though everything I said was true and I could defend it. My conscience still reproved me. Besides confessing it, I sought an opportunity to meet him and ask his forgiveness personally. And God arranged it in his providence, and I met him at a hotel. We were staying in the same hotel. So I asked for permission to go and pay my respects to him, and I said to him, "You know how hard I have been on you." Then I said, "Forgive me and bless me. We do not agree, but bless me." "All right, blessed one," he replied. "Not everyone agrees with me." Yet within myself, I felt that I also had to ask his forgiveness personally, if possible. Because then the matter is put right. It is a sin against God and a sin against one's neighbor. I had not insulted the man or accused him. I had simply said, "I disagree, I do not agree," and explained why I disagreed. But to some extent, we do not know where genuine concern ends and condemnation begins. That is precisely why it is good to keep your mouth shut and let the other person have the last word, because it is before his own Lord that he stands or falls. It is not for me to pass judgment. This is a subtle matter, then, and one we must be careful about. Yet we are ready to sit down with baskets full of gossip and discuss this person and that person. We will even dig up the dead and talk about them too. We do it in the marketplace, in the street, and everywhere else. And so on, as though nothing had happened. Then we go home and eat bean soup without oil, because it was Wednesday. After devouring people with our words, both the dead and the living, we then go and eat bean soup without oil because it is Lent. This is a delusion, and I want to draw your attention to this point. These, then, are not blessed words. They are accursed words. James, the brother of the Lord, whose feast we celebrate today, speaks succinctly about these rotten words in the first chapter, saying the following: "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth," that is, don't let a single evil word come out of your mouth. And Paul says to the Romans, "Who are you to judge another man's servant? Doesn't he have a master of his own? Doesn't he have the Lord? Who are you to sit in judgment on him and say, 'He did wrong,' or 'He did right'? Who called you in to kick up all this fuss?" And St. Gregory, the theologian, says, "Nothing is so sweet to people as condemning the faults of others. There is nothing sweeter," he says, "than hearing someone being accused, whether they are talking about a nun, a bishop, a young woman, a widow, or whoever it may be. There is nothing sweeter, he says. You sit there and listen, careful not to miss a single word. Nothing is so sweet and so gratifying to human ears as to condemn what belongs to others, that is, to talk about other people. And the divine Chrysostom says, condemnation, once it is uttered, has overturned souls and cast them down. It has overturned souls that were standing firm, and brought them down, sunk them like a ship going under, and they were punished for the judgments they passed on others. And Matthew says the very thing I told you, by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Did you find words with which to shelter him or her, to cover this person or that person, and say, how do you know? How do I know where I may find myself tomorrow? Let us pray that God will shelter her, that family, that young woman, that priest, that nun, that lady, and that gentleman who has taken this path. This is what God desires, not condemnation. Therefore, you are without excuse, O man, whoever you are who judge, for in judging another, you condemn yourself. At the very moment you judge another, he says, you condemn yourself, because God will call you to account. Therefore, as John Chrysostom says elsewhere, let us not become harsh judges of others, lest we ourselves be called to give a strict account. Let us not become harsh judges of other people, because God will also demand an account from us. And if the words of David are applied, if you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? Who can stand when Christ sets up his scales and takes his measure in order to judge a human being? Who can stand before him? And yet I have the audacity to pass judgment so lightly on people I do not know at all, not even by sight, whether they are politicians or military officers, clergy or lay people, or whatever else they may be. I do not know who they are or what they are. Leave me to my sins. Leave me to my own condition, my child. That is the answer we should give. Forgive me both for the manner and for the tone in which I have spoken, but hold fast to this. I pray that you do not belong to this category and are not guilty of this sin, and that I alone, who am speaking about it at this moment, may be guilty of it, for I believe that even for what I am saying now, I must go to holy confession again.